Coming up next on Monitor, Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference is Habib Bourguiba Jr., who is the Tunisian ambassador to the United States. He will be interviewed by Roscoe Drummond of the New York Herald Tribune, Benjamin Bradley of Newsweek, Frank Burkholzer, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Now here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Our guest today is the Tunisian ambassador to the United States, Mr. Habib Bourguiba Jr. As one of the outstanding diplomats of North Africa, he has played a leading role in his country's foreign affairs since Tunisia won her independence from France in 1956. His father, the president of Tunisia, who led the 30-year struggle for freedom, has just completed a series of conferences with President Kennedy. He also was to have been our guest today, but a sudden illness forced him to cancel. Mr. Bourguiba Jr. helped to establish the Tunisian Department of Foreign Affairs. Before coming to Washington as ambassador, he represented his government in Rome and in Paris. He served as a delegate to the United Nations at last year's assembly, and he has now been designated as ambassador to the UN and to Canada. We'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, I think you know how sorry we are about your father's illness. Have you had a report on his condition this morning, and would you tell us how he's feeling?
Well, I would hardly say that he's feeling well, but for a few years already he had this kind of recurrent bronchitis and throat weaknesses due to the overuse of his vocal cords, maybe. And the trouble is that he has been quite under strain. He had two state visits in Tunisia before departing for Canada, where he was invited, and here in the States. And I guess that he had to pay for this overstrained schedule that he's having for 3 weeks now.
His official visit to the United States and his talks with the president have been completed. What would you say of consequence has come out of this visit and those talks?
I think that this first state visit of President Bourguiba to President Kennedy could be called a real success. First, I can say that we were never expecting such a tremendous welcome, such a warm welcome from the president, from the members of the cabinet, from the members of the Congress, and from the population, which is a very encouraging thing, and especially quite a good omen for the kind of discussion which took place later. And I think, without disclosing any secret, that the discussion which went on between the two presidents were very fruitful, very interesting, and certainly of a good promise for the future of our relations.
What tangible has come out of these of this visit?
Well, I could hardly speak of any tangible come out, because the discussion, when they go on at such level, can hardly discuss with technicalities and details. I think these things have been left for the collaborators of President Bourguiba to discuss with the members of the administration that President Kennedy will appoint for talks during the coming days, beginning Monday. But the orientation, if I may add one word, the orientation of this coming discussion has been the matter of a full agreement between the two presidents.
Mr. Ambassador, there's been an unofficial story around here that President Kennedy is going to return the visit to Tunisia sometime soon.
Well, President
Bourguiba, can you tell us anything about that?
Yes, certainly. President Bourguiba yesterday extended an invitation to President Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy to visit Tunisia, and we were delighted to hear the unprepared, spontaneous answer of President Kennedy, that, saying that he would accepted the principle with great joy and that he would be anxious to be able to fulfill.
No specific date has been set yet, though.
No specific date.
Mr. Drummond.
Mr. Ambassador, your country and your father have played a very important and constructive role in working with France and Algeria to try to settle the Algerian war. I'd like to ask your judgment, namely whether in light of the successful resolution of the general's revolt, whether you feel that now is perhaps the most critical, malleable time for negotiations.
Definitely.
And whether or not there are imminent steps that should be taken to try to bring this about soon.
I definitely agree with you, Mr. Drummond. It happens that when President Bourguiba was invited by President de Gaulle to Paris in late February, that, and without expecting this revolt of the generals in Algiers, President Bourguiba insisted during his day talk with General de Gaulle on the necessity of having quick steps. Then this revolt of the generals coming, and with the crumbling of this initiative of certain people who do not try to learn anything or to remember anything, we think that more than ever it is urgent to take steps toward negotiation, because once these die-hard people had got a kind of check, one must think that all of them had no time enough to make clear their loyalty or their rebellious attitude. And there are still some people, I am sure, in France or in Algeria who had not understood.
Mr. Ambassador, do you think that there's now a state of mind on both sides, on the part of the French, on the part of the FLN, to produce a successful outcome to this very troubled situation?
I think it would be over-optimistic to speak of producing. There is a state of mind for negotiation, but I'm afraid that on the French part, the process of decolonization has not been yet the matter of a conviction. So we fear that during the discussion, excuses or little bypasses will be used to, in order to take with one hand what is given by the other hand. On the other part, from the Algerian side, we think that it is a little challenge for people who for 7 years have been fighting bitterly, mercilessly, to adjust so quickly and start really at once to act as if they have been discussing for years. So there will be difficulties, it would be a lie not to say it, but with the hopes which such discussion raise, we think that some patience should be shown by both partners in the discussion, and especially good faith.
Mr. Bradley.
Mr. Ambassador, suppose for a minute that the Algerian problem is settled. What chances are there, and what sentiment is there in North Africa for a Maghreb union of the three countries of North Africa?
Well, without saying that it is hard to reconcile both parts of your question, Mr. Bradley, I think that the chances for building up an ensemble of North Africa are conditioned by the way the settlement takes place. And as I was just saying to Mr. Drummond, if the discussion goes smoothly, if the Algerian side of the negotiators feels that the French side is really changing, is really reconversing its approach and really practicing a real decolonization, they will build up the real confidence which has been so shaken for 7 years of bitter war, and with such a solution, a North African ensemble could be built. If they feel that there are reservations, that there are reluctance, of course it will be harder to build up and shape up a North African ensemble.
Would your father be a candidate to lead such a federation?
Well, as far as I know my father, and as far as I've been working with my president, I don't think he would present himself as a candidate. But if he's asked to do so, he will not escape the responsibility of such importance.
If this federation did come into existence, how would it get along with President Nasser of Egypt?
Well, if I may correct one word, I tried not to use any institutional word, federation.
Ensemble.
I prefer ensemble, which is vague enough. Well, as far as Mr. Nasser is concerned, I don't think we are bound to ask for his advice or even his blessing if we feel, we people of North Africa, that we can form an entity because of the similarity of our stock, because of the future, the past we have, and because of the future we think we have together. So if this happens to displease Mr. Nasser, we will feel very sorry, but if it is feasible, we'll go ahead.
Mr. Newman.
Mr. Ambassador, the United States just made its first successful man in space shoot. What effect would you expect that to have in your part of the world?
Well, I think that due to the precedence taken by the USSR on such a field, the achievement which was realized yesterday will certainly reestablish the balance, because if these manned capsules or these manned engines sent into space are not yet, and I hope they will never be, are not yet used for military reasons, they are already used for psychological reasons. And I guess that a kind of balance or equilibrium will be established on this field of propaganda and psychology.
Well, what are the factors that you think control a country's prestige, let us say that control the prestige of the United States in your country? Does something like space effort have much of an effect?
Well, space effort, of course, is the spectacular thing. But again, psychology is important. And the prestige of a country like the United States, which is the leader of the free world, is conditioned by one thing: the position which the United States takes officially on official gathering like the United Nations on certain issues and matters of direct concern with the very life of these areas, countries, or even territories when they are not yet independent.
You're talking there, I suppose, about colonization and decolonization.
Exactly.
Now, what effect does foreign aid have on a country's prestige? I mean, suppose the United States gave Tunisia a great deal of money but did something about Algeria that displeased Tunisia. Where would we then stand with you?
We happen to be very frank, and we would say it very frankly that we cannot be friendly with someone who is infringing his own principles. We have been very sad for a few years to watch the delegations of the United States at the United Nations because of NATO solidarity, for instance, cast their vote and I am sure against their own will and their own feelings, with their allies. And this had a very bad effect because they became, apparently, to the eyes of the watching people, accomplices and not allies, while infringing the very principles of a country which was built on a revolution against colonialism.
Mr. Spivak.
Ambassador Bourguiba, I believe your father favors using Tunisia as a pilot project for economic development.
Yes.
What does that... Can you give us some specifics of what that would mean, for example, in terms of aid, dollar aid, and economic assistance?
Well, see, for 4 years now, the United States government had very generously helped us start our economic development. And when we say that we are ready to be the pilot state for, I think it could be even compared to a kind of laboratory. Tunisia is of small size. Tunisia has a free regime, a democratic regime, with a stable government. We think that if the aid which we already get could be a little boosted, it would not be a hemorrhage for the budget of foreign aid, but it could help Tunisia to grow at a pace, or Tunisian economy to grow and develop at a pace which in very short period would allow Tunisia to reach the self-sustaining growth stage, where she could live on her own and dispense with extra aid. And such an achievement would not only be our own egotist interest, because we would have achieved a healthy economy, but it would allow also the free world to have a show window, proving by evidence that the free world, when it helps a healthy country, an honest country, can succeed.
Well, you've been getting quite a little aid from us now. I think it amounts to what, about 20, 25 million a year?
About 20 million a year.
20. Well, how much more are you going to need in order to do a really first-rate pilot job rapidly? I think the figures I've seen have spoken of 80 million a year for the next 10 years.
Mr. Spivak, I would like to apologize. I'm not very familiar with figures, and I'm almost allergic to them. But there are certain rough figures which I know. First, I would say that we do not count only on foreign aid, whether American or United Nations technical assistance. We always start our projects first before asking help to do them. Two, as far as our Ministry or Secretary of State for Finance and Planning is preparing a planning of 10 years, we think that Tunisia is in a need of a continuous investment for 10 years, which would reach the figure of 800 million dinars of our currency. I think there are $2.40 for a dinar. So it would make it about to 8 and 8, 16, about 22.
You say there are two dinars to a dollar?
No. $2
$2
for a dinar.
Does that mean that you would need...
But this is what we intend to invest. That doesn't... what we need.
10 years,
what we're
1 billion,
going to borrow or take.
$1,600,000, roughly?
Something like that, yes.
And how much of that would you like from the United States?
Well, frankly, the studies are still on. This planning has been started only 2 months ago. And we have only the rough figures which the economy of the country needs. Now, as far as the ventilation or the choosing of the spring from which such water is needed to water our economy, we still have not made...
Are you looking for private American investment, too? Would you like that?
We would welcome it, and we welcome any private investment. We have already established a whole legislation to protect any foreign investment, not only the capital, but also the dividends.
Mr. Drummond.
Mr. Ambassador, you mentioned a moment ago the rather understandable unhappiness on the part of your country with respect to some positions which the United States has pursued at the UN and elsewhere on the question of ending colonization. Would you say that the position which the United States took on the Angola resolution has substantially, if not almost completely, reversed or resolved that unhappiness?
Definitely. I would not completely reverse. I would not say that.
I understand.
But it had certainly had a very, very deep effect. And the best evidence, I think, is to watch the reaction of the Portuguese themselves.
Yes.
And just the reaction of the Portuguese is also interpreted by the people in Angola. And I'm sure that the attitude, the new position taken on Angola by the United States delegation had certainly a very good effect. And, of course, these people expect, once they have seen America taking back her natural orientation, her vocational orientation, to keep on steady on this.
I think your father, in his address before Congress yesterday, underlined a truth which I think most Americans accept, that we are not really looking for satellites and don't want satellites, but we want independent friends.
Exactly.
I would like to ask if you would indicate what you mean by a policy of non-alignment. Let me just raise one point first, mm-hmm. and that is you're not neutral toward independence.
Oh, no.
And you are not indeed neutral toward communism because you have shown that that is not your way of life. Mm-hmm. And therefore, non-alignment probably is not equivalent with neutralism or neutrality. Therefore, I'd like you to explain what you mean by non-alignment.
Well, non-alignment is a kind of definition. In this age of slogans, you have to find something, a label.
Something nearest to the truth.
Non-alignment is not neutralism, because we think and we believe that neutralism cannot exist in this word, where any action generates a counteraction even at the opposite part of the earth. What we called non-alignment was a way to express our unhappiness as a member, because we feel we are a member of the free world, our unhappiness at seeing the world or the members of the free world let a huge gap get established between the principles of this free world as they are said and presented, and the policy as it is practiced. So we decided to take a certain distance, certain freedom, which would allow us not to vote automatically with the free world because we are the... That is the satellite approach. When we feel the free world is wrong, we say it. When it's right, we say it.
Gentlemen, we have about 3 minutes. Mr. Bradley.
Can we come back to Algeria again, Mr. Ambassador? Do you ever worry about what kind of an Algeria would emerge as an independent nation? This is a country that is enormously larger than your own, has enormously more natural resources than your own, and it will presumably be run by people who have not had a great deal of experience in government. Does this worry you? Is this a factor?
Again, Mr. Bradley, the way, the methods, and the psychology of the negotiation and the way Algeria will become independent will condition the very existence or the very orientation of this new state.
Mr. Newman.
Mr. Bourguiba, you spoke before of a possible lack of will toward decolonization in France. Do you think that that applies to President de Gaulle?
I don't think I said the lack of will. I said that people are still conditioned. And it takes time for people to decondition themselves. As far as General de Gaulle is concerned, I think he is willing to decolonize. But due to the very background of his even school years, when he was a kid of 5 years, he was taught things. He is conditioned also, and of course it takes a tremendous effort to overcome your own inhibitions or your own condition.
The first time I was
But he's an honest man, and he believes, and I believe he wants to do something serious.
The first time I was in your country was when the French Air Force bombed the village of Sakiet in Tunisia because the French Air Force said it was chasing Algerian rebels in Tunisia. Do you fear that anything like that can happen again?
Well, during the 4 days of Algeria rebellion, we were feeling such thing. We hope it won't take place.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, I understand that your father discussed with Marshal Tito a summit meeting of the world's neutrals, now planned by President Nasser and Marshal Tito. Will you give us your opinion of the value of bringing together the neutral countries, including the South American countries, into such a summit?
Well, I think that neutral countries are not neutralist countries. If they are real neutral, it could be useful. But all depend on the way such discussion will take part and on the outcome of it.
Will your country take part in such a meeting?
Well, I don't think we have already taken any decision on this field. We would like to see the kind of agenda which would be prepared.
Gentlemen, I think at this point I'll have to interrupt. I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for being with us.
Our thanks to Habib Bourguiba Jr., the Tunisian ambassador to the United States. The members of the panel were Roscoe Drummond of the New York Herald Tribune, Benjamin Bradley of Newsweek, Frank Burkholder of NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Next week, the guest on Meet the Press will be Dr. Jonas Salk. Meet the Press, which is celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Spivak. Last year, 38,000 people died in automobile accidents in the United States, a shocking...